Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening and welcome to The Man's Voice here on this Sunday afternoon here in Atlanta. The weather is quite nice, so we're enjoying it, but I hope wherever you are or wherever my panels are still is good also. We have 1, 2, 3, 4 of the panelists on board. The other four might come in soon. We will be missing one due to emergency situation, but we still will going to go. But I'd like to say hello. Let's see, there's Ron on, there is Bruce on, there's Michael on, and there's Don on. Welcome, guys.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Hello, David. Hey, guys.
And you, listening to us calling and joining this panel, you can make a big panel by just calling in and telling us what you're thinking or what you would like us to talk about. But that number to call in would be 646-668-8740. So, and we love it when our listeners call in, no matter where you are around the world, just give us a call and we will handle whatever it is you want to talk about. But I would like to start off with some of the things that I've noticed. It seems to me that since the pandemic, I don't know about the rest of the world, but the United States has been having a lot of issues, a lot of mental issues. There are how many mass shootings in the last year, like 15 or, you know, just the amount of people that are out just doing crazy things and killing and shooting and doing all that kind of thing has seems to have multiplied since the pandemic. And I think that, and I've heard every once in a while, you'll hear that a doctor will say, well, there's some mental issues that happens when you get COVID, you know, 19. But the CDC or nothing, nobody has put out anything saying that that is an issue. And I don't know why we're not investigating it, because it does seem that there was a lady complaining. Why does she feel like she's had the COVID, but she feels like she wants to go in and kill her kids and throw them out over the balcony? And she doesn't know why she feels like that. So she went to a doctor and she was at the hospital. She went to emergency to say that she was having these mental issues. They're saying that it was part of her COVID. And if that's the case, why aren't we having this discussion? Why are people not doing it? Or do you think it is not anything that related? Is that just me? Bruce, what are your thoughts?
Well, I would agree with you, David, that what some of the doctors said, what you just said. On top of that, though, just maybe in on piling on top of the COVID kinds of concerns is we're under a lot of stress. We're under a lot of crazy things going on with confinement and things being revved up and fluffed up and whipped up in, for a variety of reasons. So there's a lot of turmoil, I think, mentally for a lot of people. And you heard me say before, the luckiest people that we have are the ones that are able to disseminate, evaluate, and handle stress wherever it comes from. And like that one mother said, you know, I'm having these feelings and I don't know why. So couldn't agree with you more that we have been kept in the dark intentionally or unintentionally, doesn't matter. We've been kept in the dark as far as, I think, talking about these things so people can make up intelligent decisions on how to handle their particular concerns, needs, whatever the case may be. And it's more about labeling and the bickering back and forth instead of providing that energy to educate us. And I think we'd be much better off if that happened.
I agree. Ron, what are your thoughts?
Bruce, I think you're absolutely right. I think
you know, there's a lot of stress out there, but how you deal and cope with the stress is what separates, you know, those of us that continue living a normal, quote-unquote, normal life in society from those who lose total self-control and go on these mass shootings or have thoughts of, you know, throwing their kids off balconies. I mean, I'll tell you myself, I mean, there's a lot of there's a lot of people that are on the edge, right? But whether you go over the edge or not, you know, that depends, I guess, on a lot of factors, including your mental state and other things. I'm not a doctor or a psychiatrist, but like me, for example, personally, I'll tell you that I'm a lot more short-tempered and short-fused lately. And I know it's the stress and you know, and sometimes I say things that I shouldn't say to people, but then I realize it and, you know, I'll apologize or whatever. But, you know, these are very stressful times, not just in this country, but all over the world. I saw a video that somebody sent me of people in Italy, in Rome, rioting because they want the government to stop the shutdowns and let them open up their businesses, you know. So, and then you see what's going on, you know, with huge numbers of people dying in Brazil and India, you know, and then these mass shootings. I mean, it seems like the world is ending. It's like apocalyptic in a way. But hopefully, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel is getting brighter. I'm still concerned about the huge number of people that are reluctant to get vaccines, and I'm sure we'll talk about that. But I think you're right, Bruce. It's how you handle the stress and control yourself.
All right.
Ron,
can I just mention
one thing to respond to him, David?
Yes, go ahead.
Ron, one of the things that helps me a lot, and I feel lucky in the fact that I think I handle stress very well, and I get concerned and upset, but I don't get angry. And one of the things that helped me personally is, to the best of your ability, Ron, stay connected with people that you're either family or comfortable with or friends. And this total disconnection of some people with no connection with, quote, real people, I think is a bad move. So that might help if you don't do that already. That surely is helpful.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Bruce, and that is helpful. And I stay connected. Thankfully, I have a lot of good friends, or not a lot, but, you know, a handful of very good friends that I stay connected with. Unfortunately, my two brothers are a different story. We hardly talk to each other anymore, but that's a whole nother story, and that has to do with politics. Yeah.
All right, Michael, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm going to piggyback a little bit off of what Ron said, man. It's starting to feel a little apocalyptic right now. It really is, because there's just so much going on in the world right now. I mean, there's a genocide going on right now in northern Ethiopia that no one's even talking about as of yet. And what Ron said about what's going on in Europe and what's going on here in America, yeah, I'm just getting a little nervous. And I feel like America's a big, beautiful castle that's built on sand, and that castle's beginning to crumble with all the stress we're under right now, with the pandemic and all the racial divisions that are going on in the country right now, the shootings. I mean, I just feel like the bow is about to break and the wheels are coming off the car in regards to the United States of America. And it's sad to say, I hate to say, to see it happen, but I don't see it getting any better. I really do not see it getting any better. I don't see how it's going to get any better. I don't see a way forward. It just continues to get worse. So, yeah, it's we're living in crazy times right now, David. We really are.
You know, there are certain comments I'm getting from listeners who are putting it in a conspiracy theory that this virus, which came from Asia, might not have just been, might have been man-made to cause these issues. Soil, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, this is not just COVID, but I think this is every single catastrophe, disaster that's ever happened in human history. You see the worst in people, and you also see the best in society when tragedy happens. The Black Plague, famine, the coronavirus, and it affects people differently. And it affects me right now because of school, and I'm just one of those people that is not an online learner, and it affects me in a bad way. But also looking at my friends and my family and seeing how their livelihoods are affected, like how am I going to pay my mortgage? How am I going to pay my insurance? It really does jitter people up, and that causes health problems down the road, high blood pressure and stress. And I do point this out with people. I think for the United States to be the kind of country that we are, we have a very deplorable healthcare system, and it does neglect people who do need healthcare the most, which only further contributes to problems that don't get resolved later on down the road.
That's a good point. Don, what are your thoughts?
You know, I've heard a lot of good comments. You guys are right on point. And, you know, I think I go back a little bit further than the other brothers on this call in age. But I'm reminded of a place called Jackson, Michigan. Jackson, Michigan was a city where they had a state hospital where they would put people that had mental problems. And it was a big hospital, and people would be sent there if they had mental issues. The federal government closed down facilities like that, and those people were released into the public years ago. So we had a population of people that already had mental problems in the community, released into society. And then you compound it with COVID-19, where we were isolating. And, well, the scripture says, be fruitful and multiply. We as human beings were meant to interact and socialize with each other. And now we are faced with having to be alone. I always said, my mind's like a bad neighborhood. I don't go up there by myself anymore. You are meant to be with other people. And now we have to isolate and lean to our own understanding. And, man, I tell you, it's terrible. And with the mass shootings and people getting killed, I mean, what do we have to do to stop this? You know, I heard one person that I really respect today, the evangelist, Pat Robinson. Pat Robinson. And, you know, I don't think we would agree that today is Sunday, but he said something about the mass shootings that was so awesome. He said, when will this stop? He even related to the killings that have gone on over the past year or two. Man, we got to do something. This is not political. We got to do something quick. And if your politician in your city is not doing it, let them know that the election's coming up and we're going to get them out of there.
Okay, but if you said it's not political, then why did you go to politicians? How would you define this? How would you fix it without politicians?
Well, they control the gun laws, David. And
right.
Why do we need assault weapons? Why do we need them? What makes the person want to carry an assault weapon to kill 10? Shoot 100 times or 5 times or 10 times. What would make a person want to do that?
Do you think that if the American public was given the option to come up with some type of law, weapons law, that they would, that the majority would, or the majority would not, because there are all these people who want to have their guns, who think guns are a way of life. So is America, which way do you think America would go, Don?
You know, all my life, America has said, I want my guns, and the NRA has been dominant through funds and money and back these politicians. So, David, now we've come to, as Michael said, a reckoning. A reckoning. What are we going to do? Okay, keep your guns and keep dealing with mass shootings. We just had one today in Texas. As we are talking on this call, there's a mass shooting going on in Texas. Okay, so, I mean, man, it's crazy. We got to deal with this, and the politicians control it.
All right, let me ask Spencer, what are your thoughts on this issue with guns? Spencer. Wow.
Well, hey, David, can I weigh in on that a little bit?
Sure.
I think with the, in regards to the politicians, what my man is saying, the politicians do make the laws, and I think it should be a compromise right now between the Republicans and the Democrats in regards to this. If the Republicans want us to show IDs to vote, then we want you to give background checks when anyone goes to purchase a firearm. That should be a good little compromise that I think the Republicans and the Democrats to come together on. And another thing, just to button that up, the Constitution says we have a right to bear arms. It does. It's in the Constitution. But it doesn't say you have a right to ammunition. They could ban ammunition. They could ban the sale, the manufacture of bullets, and that would solve the problem.
Hey, Michael.
Michael, that's already happening.
Wait a minute, Bruce.
You can't get ammunition anywhere.
Wow. Bruce, hold on. Ron,
Michael, I was going to say, you know, I'm completely in agreement with you. But my question is, how do we deal with, because I know a family that's actually going through this right now, where the parents are the ones that purchase the guns, but the son, who is not very mentally stable, uses them and goes out into the not even the range, the shooting ranges, but goes out into the outer limits of the city where he lives and shoots the gun out into the glades or whatever. I mean, how do you deal with crazy people like that where they're not the ones that are buying the gun? So a background check on that on that person wouldn't work. You know, it's kind of complicated.
Okay.
Hey, David. Yes? Let me ask a quick question again. What makes a person want to buy a firearm that will shoot multiple times? It only takes one bullet to kill a person.
Yeah, but
I asked my brother that same question, Don. Don, my brother has those types of guns or rifles or whatever they're called. I don't even know because I don't own one. But I asked him, I said, why do you need something that will shoot however many number of rounds? And he says, because if all hell breaks loose, I need to be able to defend myself. And I'm like, I just shake my head. I don't even know what to say.
Let me, Ron. Let me put this out there like this. Why do women need better, bigger diamonds? Because they're attracted to them, because they want them, because they feel good having them. Well, people who like guns, having a bigger, better gun makes you feel bigger, better. So I kind of understand why you want an AR-47 or something like that, because you want to be that person, you know, you're military minded. But the fact is, why are we selling it to them? Why are they even legal in the United States for public to have?
And David,
so,
I know guys who have.
I'd like to chime in eventually
nice
on this, guys.
Well, finish, Michael, and then Bruce.
Okay, I know guys who live in really nice neighborhood, gated communities, with security and everything, but they have a cache of weapons inside their house. And I asked them, I'm like, even if intruders make it past the security, past the gate to your house, you're not going to go through all these guns on the intruder. You just need one gun. Why do you have 20 guns? Like, it just doesn't make any sense. They need to regulate that.
Okay, Bruce.
I come from a unique view that everybody seems to have forgotten nowadays, and I know why, because of the tension and all that. A lot of people, I've been around guns my entire life. My dad hunted, and my brother shot, and we used to eat, shoot, and practice shoot, and all this and that. So I've been around the guns most of my life. And there are, I would say, far more than the majority of people that either are around guns or own guns that have no feelings that you gentlemen have just expressed. Me being one of them. I don't own a big gun or anything like that, but that wouldn't make me feel bigger or smaller. So there's a lot of people have them for the purpose of sport. I know that sounds on the edge and crazy these days, but majority of people that own guns that are responsible gun owners don't have them for any of the reasons you've all mentioned. And as far as the number, I don't have a problem letting someone have as many as they have a right to own. I do agree with Michael, though. I think, Michael, you said it earlier when you said, if we're going to have an ID to vote, which I think is, I can't tell you how important that is, why not an ID or a better background check for purchasing of weapons? I agree with that. That's a common sense solution to that.
But Bruce, do you agree that people should be able to purchase and own a semi-automatic gun?
A semi-automatic gun, yeah. Because in sports Let me answer. A single shot weapon isn't all that. A pump shotgun for skeet and stuff like that. You don't do single shot. Some do that are much better than a lot of people. They might be good with one shot, but there are other reasons. Now, also I will add, that I think you guys will agree with, that I don't see the purpose of magazines that are, you know, god-awful number of ammunition. But
A semi-automatic holds in the breech,
you know, 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 shells. Yeah.
I've never seen somebody go skeet shooting with an AK-47.
Well, really? I didn't mention an AK-47. And also, that's stupid. No, you don't go skeet shooting with AK-47. I get your point, but Ron, the point is, I've heard other people say the AK-47s they sell now, unless, like you said, they get these add-on magazines that I disagree with that lets them have more ammunition immediately accessible. But a normal one that might hold 3, 4, 5, 7 shells, it's usually between 7 and 9 as an average. An AK-47, which I've never even seen one. I don't know what they really look like, other than they look military. Is a ordinary rifle that looks military. So I agree that kind of rifle and every other kind of rifle shouldn't have that capability of shooting many more rounds of ammunition. I agree with that. But taking that weapon, Bruce, that looks like a let me finish one thing and then I'll shut up. Taking that weapon totally off the market, that black market couldn't even find one, isn't going to solve the problem. They'll just find another weapon to use.
Bruce, here we got a situation, Bruce, where you just said, that you've grown up around guns all most of your life, and I get it. To go hunting and sport hunting and so forth. But, Bruce, America has changed. We're no longer hunting deer and animals. We're hunting human beings now. Can you get that? We're hunting human beings compounded with racial issues, sickness, deranged people with guns. They're not hunting animals anymore. They're hunting human beings, and now we got to change.
But someone's got a lot of interference there. But, Don, you are automatically saying all these sportsman-type people that still do sport, if not actual target practice for a sport, believe it or not, that you've made it sound like the only reason people have guns now is to go hunt two-legged animals, and that's asinine. Is it happening? Yes. Is that the total focus or the major focus? H, no, it is not. And you know that, Don, so don't make it sound like it is. Do we have a lot of problems to fix? Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more. But this crap about saying, you know, people are just walking around hunting people down is ridiculous.
Well, that's what I'm seeing, Bruce.
Well, I don't know what glasses you're looking through, but you need to get them cleaned.
Yeah, and you need to also pay attention to what's happening around you, because anytime you see this many killing in your face, it's plain to see.
It's a problem, Don. We agree on that. It's a problem. It's a big problem.
We just had Pat Robbins. Pull up Pat Robbins, Bruce, and listen to what he has to say. He's a stark conservative all of his life. And, you know, we'll never be able to solve this issue, Bruce, until people that are not, listen to me, that are not of color start speaking up and dealing with this issue. We've been dealing with it for 400 years. I know I've been dealing with it most of my life. But until people that are not of color start speaking up, we're not going to be able to deal with this.
May I revise your statement? I would say you're partly right. It's not until people of other than black color speak up, or black and brown. Everyone needs to be on this message.
Black and brown have been speaking up for all their life. We've been speaking up. Like I said, we will not be able to deal with this situation, Bruce, until people that are not of color start speaking up.
Speaking up more, I would agree with that. Not being totally silent, I would disagree with that. That has not been the case.
Okay, let's get some other thoughts. So you've been listening to this. What's your thoughts?
Did you call my name? Because you kind of cut out a bit.
Yes, I did. Yes.
When it comes to gun violence in this country, I do have various amounts of beliefs. But first is, the media does ignore the gun violence that goes on in neighborhoods, particularly in Chicago. They talk about the mass shootings and all these other kind of things it's sad that that happens, but literally tens of people get killed every weekend in the streets of Chicago, and they don't say anything about it. Last year, I think Chicago had 769 gun homicides, and usually the homicide rate for gun violence in Chicago is always over 500. And if you times that by the current rate, I think that's about 10 times as many people died in Pearl Harbor, and they don't talk about it. I mean, that young boy, Adam Toledo, he got shot by a police officer, but they didn't talk about the 17-year-old black girl that died a couple feet away from him, and she was shot by a police officer. And this country, more than anything, has a mental health problem. They don't spend as much money on health care as they should. And in the areas where they are spending health care, they barely, vaguely address mental health care problems. Where I live, I see a whole bunch of people who don't know what their name is. They're a little crazy sometimes. And the lack of mental health care in the city, in this entire country, is sickening. And this is what happens. People will get their hands on weapons, knives, guns, whatever, and they'll harm themselves or harm other people, somewhat suicidal, and they just don't care what they're doing or who they're going to bring down with them. And it's very sad that presidents, senators, congresspeople, whatever, they don't address it. and they only address issues that seem somewhat important to them or the people that are sponsoring them and who fund their campaigns. I think that every single person should have like one of those NASCAR suits that shows who their donors are so we can see who they're truly serving, because the parties may be first, the countries may be second, maybe we probably come third, and their donors are always first, and I think it's extremely sad.
All right, Jeremiah, what are your thoughts on this?
I mean, I agree with Don. I just think that I agree with a lot of the guys. I think that something really needs to be done. Past tense, because it's really bad. It happens every day. It's happened more than a dozen times around the country to children, adults. It's time out for all this stuff. We really need to crack down. There's no sense of someone owning, you know, so many military-style weapons. Like, what's the need for it? Just because you can afford it, you can buy it. That's not fair to the people that has gotten killed, whether one of these kids took the guns from their house, from their parents, you know? Just like Michael said, hey, it's probably a guy that has, you know, 7 automatic weapons. Why do you need 7 to fight off any attackers? That's the same person that his son is.
Hello, Jeremiah. You went out.
With 7 military-style weapons.
Okay.
David, I have a question to ask you, David.
Sure.
David, you have experience in law enforcement, and this is something that I need you to chime in on and help me with. If a police officer has their gun on the right-hand side because they're right-handed and their taser on the left-hand side, why would a person pull the taser or the gun and say it was a mistake when they've been doing this for 26 years and they know which one is the gun, which weighs more than a taser, that doesn't even feel like a gun? How can that happen? And you've been doing it for 26 years. Explain that to me.
I'll tell you how it can happen, although I don't agree that it should happen, but I can tell you how it can happen, because situations, the adrenaline that you have in your body is running really fast, which means your mind isn't on weapons. Your mind is on what's going on to protect yourself and the community. So when you reach down, if you know, sometimes you have always reached for, you know, the wrong pen or pencil or something, or you reach down. But it should, when you pull it, it's so fast, and the adrenaline is running and things are happening so fast, you pull it and use it before you think about what happened, which is not, you should not, that should not be happening. But I can understand how it can happen, because a lot of situations, things are going where you don't have time to think. You're busy reacting to something and you're grabbing something. Now, you would think that the weapon weighs more. But one of the things I don't understand is why they're making tasers to look like guns, why they're making them to put holsters and things, because there are other kind of tasers. Not all police departments use gun-style tasers, but that police department should be reprimanded for even putting tasers in holsters like that. But I can understand that she was probably having a mental issue that we've been talking about earlier and just pulled and shot before she thought about what's in her hand. Which is, I don't agree with it, but I do understand how it can happen. But I also understand that it shouldn't be the police. It should also be the police department's responsibility for putting a taser in the shape of a 45 automatic. Like in Los Angeles, where I was, you could only have a 38. You were not allowed to have any gun more powerful or anything than a 38, because in Los Angeles, it's so crowded. If you shoot the gun, you only need to be shooting one bullet at one time, and it needs to go to wherever you're aiming it at. You don't need to be rapid shooting and doing everything. So in Los Angeles, you would have been fired and you would have been put in jail if you were out running around as a police officer with something other than a 28 in the police issued weapon. And I think more other agencies might need to go that direction. And they need to take these guns that look like tasers and go back to the taser that, you know, that just doesn't feel or look like a gun. Did I answer your question, Don?
Yes.
Good.
David,
also,
can
David,
I ask you a follow-up?
Can I weigh in on that?
Can I weigh in on that, David?
Well, hold on. You can, but somebody was before you. Somebody else asked before Bruce. Who was that?
That was Michael. That was me, David.
Michael?
No, who was that just now besides Michael?
Jeremiah.
Oh, there you go. That was Jeremiah. Okay, go ahead, Jeremiah.
So I want to add one thing to it. We also got to remind ourselves that prior to having tasers, officers used their deadly force weapon, which is their handgun, to tactful assist in helping someone obey with commands. So we got to understand that prior to using a taser, officers have done this for more than 20 years, give you commands with their weapon. So it's not like, you know, and when you have a situation where it's flight or fight, you're by yourself, it's a group of six guys, you could have a gun on your side. You don't know what they have on their side. You know, we're not taking up for what officers do, but everyone needs to understand the situation the officer's in. You might not have any backup. You don't know how many guns they have. It might be turned into the Wild Wild West where you got to pull out faster than they pull out. You might pull out your taser and he pulls out a gun. You're dead. You know what I mean? But understandably, you shouldn't be pulling the wrong weapon to use, whether it's deadly force or minimal force. You shouldn't be pulling the wrong weapon, but it can happen. Nobody's perfect. And if that happens, you know, everyone has to live with that circumstance. And also, I want to add one thing. I don't think we discussed what happened to the Army lieutenant when he was maced by police. I just thought about that incident while we were talking about this.
Go ahead, Jeremiah.
Oh, so basically there's a Army lieutenant, and he was, I believe he was pulled over. He was asked to get out of the vehicle. You know, when you're at a traffic stop, you don't have to get out of your vehicle. Driver's license and registration, and you know, the officer would cite you. But when the officer walked into his vehicle, he demanded he get out the car. The lieutenant was in uniform, and he told him, listen, sir, I don't have to get out of my vehicle. You know, tell me why you're stopping me. I'll give you my driver's license. And the police officer tased him and made him get on the ground. And when I watched the video, I said, he doesn't have to get on the ground, but it just shows the level of disrespect that an officer or a person is willing to disrespect another person and make you go through something. Why you couldn't have put him on the car? Just like when you're patting somebody down. Why you couldn't have put him on your car, his car? Why did you demand the person to the ground? When he's already de-escalated, he's maced, he could barely see, barely could fight back, and you have two officers at the location. So it just shows you the mindset of officers today. Whether or not it's deadly force or it's just a common tactic or respect, I think that situation was horrible, and the officer was fired because of his actions. And the police department might get sued as well. I'm done.
Right. All right, Michael, you want to say something?
Yeah, and actually I'm going to piggyback off of what he just said. I was going to say, let's start in regards to the young man, the 20-year-old kid that was shot and killed, taser versus gun. Let's start the conversation from the beginning. Why was that guy being pulled over in the first place? He was getting pulled over because they said tags and they found out he had a warrant. Well, why is it that every young black man in America just happens to have a warrant? Like, what's going on there with that? I think we need to have that conversation, because in each one of these incidents, they always say, well, we were arresting him because he had a warrant and then he resisted, so we killed him. That's the same story. So you got to ask, okay, what is it that makes all young black men just happen to coincidentally have a warrant? Well, I'm going to answer that question. You know how many times as a black man I've been pulled over and they told me I had a warrant that I did not have, took me into custody, only to find out it was a mistake after holding me into a holding cell for 8 or 9 hours. That's a racist systemic pattern within American system, is that every time a black man is pulled over, they always tell him, hey, you got a warrant, step out of the car, even when he doesn't have a warrant. Or maybe, yeah, he does have a warrant because you pulled him over 2 weeks ago and wrote a ticket that you knew he couldn't pay, and now he has a warrant for that ticket he didn't pay that you wrote him. So I think we need to start this entire conversation from the beginning and look at the reason why so many interactions with black people of color and white police officers are taking place in the first place.
And also, what do you think about the situation with the Army lieutenant and the police?
Yeah, I saw that. That was horrible. He's pepper sprayed the guy and everything, pulled him out the car, just totally disrespected a guy in uniform who was fighting for our country. So if the police feel that way about that guy, how do you think they feel about the black guy that just works at the post office that's driving down the street at night? Yeah, that was just horribly disrespectful. And the whole system just needs to change.
All right. All right.
America has a heart problem, David.
There we go. Wow. All right. So, guys, let's move around and talk about what things that you see from last week or from that you have in your mind that you would like to talk about. And I want to throw out our number, 646-668-8740. If you're listening to this, I get a lot of texts from people who want to ask questions, but if you are listening to this, why don't you just join us and dial in and join the panel. And that number is, once again, 646-668-8740. Just call us and talk to us. But let's move around. Why don't we start with, let's go to Ron. Ron, what's on your mind? What would you like the panel to talk about?
Well, I you know, it's too bad that Darius isn't on, because I wanted to ask our two fellow Republican panelists this question, and it has to do with COVID and the vaccines. And I don't know the numbers for a fact, but I do know that a large percentage of the people that of Americans that are hesitant or refusing to get a vaccine are Republicans. And I wanted, I guess, Bruce, you're the only Republican on right now. Why do you think that is? What's your perspective on that? Do you think it's the Trump effect, or what? Why do you think that is?
Well, first of all, for the 18th time, I need to remind you guys, I'm independent, but I definitely agree a lot more with the right-leaning ideology than the left. So I'll say it, the 19th. But to answer your question, state it again. I kind of tuned out when that happened.
Yeah, let me preface it by saying that, you know, we're still in the middle of a pandemic, and there's a lot of people. I went out in Miami today. There's a lot of people that are acting and behaving like we are completely out of the pandemic. And yet Michigan and Florida both have the highest cases of the B.1.1.7 variant, and the cases are going up. People are dying. I heard in Michigan that the hospitals are, you know, people lined up on gurneys in the hallways. And my question was that the majority of the people, at least the news that I watched, the way it's reported, that refuse to get the vaccines are Republicans. And I'm trying to understand why that is. Is it a political thing? Is it the Trump effect? I mean, I just can't put my finger on it.
I would also add to that, as I've heard Don say before, and I'm glad he changed his mind, a lot of African American and other minorities, particularly African American, I think, Don, correct me if I'm wrong, have, for a variety of reasons and some very serious reasons, been squeamish about taking the vaccine. So it's not just Republican and Democrat, it's other groups. But irrespective of the groups, there are too many people, I think you'd agree, Ron, that are squeamish or for whatever their personal reason is, don't want to take the COVID. So I think we agree on that. I would say if a lot of them are Republicans, is, you know, the deeper South, the conservative thinking, the more associated with recreational and evidently other types of guns and that sort of thing, that they kind of group that group into Trumpianism, and that they don't want to do it. Yet he was encouraging people full steam ahead when he left office that they should take it, and had a big part in getting the vaccines at least there. And Biden has done a good job of getting it disseminated and the rest of the doses made, so he should get credit for that. But I think we need to stop, whether it's true or not, we need to stop the grouping of it and say, look, whoever is reluctant, let's find out why. What are the main reasons why, and try to inform. We're not getting enough information so people can make in their own minds, an informed, intelligent decision on yes or no. I see that myself. People have come up to me and said, well, you got the dosages in your butt. Why did you what made you decide? I get that question a lot, and they don't know if I'm a Republican or Democrat. We just start talking about it. So I think, again, I keep beating that drumbeat. We need more education so people can make an informed decision. I think, like you said, Don, I think what changed your mind, you might want to reshare it with the audience. I thought it was you just gave it a lot of thought and some godly guidance and decided it had more pluses than minuses. Is that kind of close?
Yeah, but I'd like to kind of respond to what Ron asked you. He said, why is it that the Republicans are not taking the vaccine? And I think it's the Trumpy factor. It's the Trumpy factor. And the fact is that African-Americans, Bruce, were disproportionately affected through health disparities.
We had a
history of health disparities like the syphilis and no insurance and bad health suggestions, lack of information and information, and it has not been done very well. The federal government has money to spend on education and information, but they have not done an effective job of educating people about the vaccine. Right now, they just put Johnson & Johnson on hold, and that's affected Moderna and Pfizer. People are saying, my God, I better wait because they might be like Johnson & Johnson. So, I mean,
lack of info creates fear. I agree with you.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, let me throw out some numbers. Wait a minute, Bruce, hold on. Let me throw out some numbers.
No, go ahead.
With this conversation right here. And I'm doing it by population. Let's look at California. California has 39.5 million people that they say are in California. Of that, they have 15.5 million doses in the state, but of that, only 8.8 million people have been vaccinated. Texas has 29 has 29 million people in their state. Of that, they only vaccinated 5.8 million, and they have 11.3 million doses in the state. Florida has 21.5 million people. Of that, only 4.7 million people have been vaccinated in Florida, and they do have 9.6 million doses in the state. New York has 19.5 million people in the state. Of that, 5 million people have been vaccinated, and they have 7.8 million doses. So I think last week, Soel had the best, because we're talking about what happens when everybody gets vaccinated. More people are not vaccinated than have been vaccinated. I mean, all these numbers, nobody's at 50%. Nobody is close. And last weekend, Soel said the way to get everybody vaccinated is to give some type of tax incentive so everybody will do it. I think that was the best thought so far that came up. But right now we're all thinking, I think in our minds, that people, that the states are 50% more vaccinated based on this standard that just came out today from the CDC. We're not even close. We're not even 25% vaccinated in the United States. So give me your thoughts on that, Ron.
Well, but, you know, if you look at the rest of the world, we are way ahead, I think, of pretty much almost every other country in terms of percentage of people vaccinated. But I heard something that was very scary today, and so true, I think, is that this isn't a problem that's going to go away once we get all Americans vaccinated. If the rest of the people in the world are not vaccinated, this problem, this COVID-19 and the mutations and variations, they're going to continue to exist. And so it's something that we're going to be dealing with for a long time unless, you know, the whole world gets on board. And, you know, of course, the United States has to lead that effort, as we always do with everything, because we've got the resources and we've got the production of the vaccines, much more so than any other country.
Hey, Ron, you know what? I've got a dear friend of mine that's a ER doctor at the Cleveland Clinic, and he put it very simple to me that kind of tipped me over the edge, Bruce. He said to me, he said, Don, you have health disparities. Now, let me ask you a question. Would you rather die of COVID-19 or die of the vaccine?
He got to you, Don, and I'm glad he did.
That's a no-brainer to me.
He did.
Do you see how he prefaces?
Yeah. Yeah. Can I add something? Your statistics, David, and something Ron said. Dave, your statistics cut across all kinds of nationalities and political beliefs and so forth, the ones you were stating. So that's another example of it's not just a group, a race, a section of the country. In my opinion, I think Don said it too, it's a lack of not enough information to make the best decision and convince people, right, to do it, the ones that really are on the fence. And
yes,
and what you said, Ron, isn't it ironic that we're supposed to be in a nation now, in a world that is more connected than ever, electronically, communications up the yin-yang about every technique and way we can communicate, yet we're so poorly and uninformed, it's ridiculous. That, to me, seems quite a dichotomy.
You know, yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, I was going to... Yeah, Bruce, you better stay in because in Michigan, there are 10.5 million people. Of that, only 2.4 million have been vaccinated, although in Michigan, there are 4.5 million doses sitting on the table waiting for somebody to claim them and to get shot. So I think, you know, when you look at these statistics, what is it that we're not doing to getting people to take the vaccination? In Georgia, when you drive down the street, you know, you see the sign saying everybody 16 and above needs to be vaccinated on the street signs and you know, and lights as you're going down the highway now. But I think we need to come up with something better. I think we should elect Noel as some kind of ambassador to go and figure out how to give a tax incentive or something, because the only way for everybody in this country to get everything open is for these numbers to go up. And I think most people think that we are up, but we're not.
David, it was made available to those 65 plus and then the older demographic. And now they've opened it up for 18 plus.
Right.
That's wonderful. A question. Michael in California and Suelle in Nevada, have you guys taken the vaccine? And if not, why not?
And
Michael, I have not yet taken it, but I do have every intention to take it. They just kind of made it available for 16 and up, if I'm not mistaken. So to answer your question, I intend to take it. I just have not taken it yet.
Good, right. Good answer.
So, well, you're in the 20s. Have you had your vaccination, or are you going to get it?
I haven't. One of the reasons why is because I'm not sure if you know, Nevada does have a high elderly population, so they really did prioritize giving it to them first than other people. And I think one of the main places they do have the vaccine right now is at the Cashman Center, which is on the other side of town. And I have been carless for like the last month, so I'm not going to get a $30 Uber over there because I like having my money. So I'll wait. And when I get my car back, I'll drive over there and make an appointment. I'll see what the whole thing is about. I've read about the vaccine. My friends have gotten it, and I feel safe taking it, but I'm not going to take it anytime soon because I'm not paying $30 for Uber.
Wow. All right. All right, gentlemen.
David?
Yes.
Can I add something real quick? The idea about the financial reward or incentive, maybe better said, to get someone to take the shot, we respond to that. So I don't think that's a bad idea because you know there's going to be another economic impact payment coming down the pike. So tie it to that. It's a double benefit. And finally, I saw a video and talked to a doctor about a severe case of someone that died from the COVID virus. And it will scare you to death. In some way, we need to have that fear factor out there so people understand what's really at stake.
Hey, Bruce, and I need to say this for the sake of Suel and all the other young listeners and panelists. A friend of mine who just turned 30 has had COVID now for over a week, and he has had a very rough going. And so much so that he was afraid for his life and said, please pray for me. So it's nothing to, you know, mess around with.
No, it's not.
All right, gentlemen. I know that Spencer's on the phone. He hasn't been doing a lot of talking, even when I call him and try to talk to him. But Spencer, are you going to talk anything about sports? Because what I want to talk about is how come the NBA, not how come, what are your thoughts on the NBA? That most of all the games could be postponed after the Chauvin verdict if he's not found guilty. What are your thoughts on that, Spencer?
It's a smart move by them because they don't know exactly what's going to happen, whether he's found guilty or innocent. I just think it's going to have that effect throughout probably all of sports. You know, it's just going to be a trickle-down effect. And I just think it's a smart move. You never know what's going to happen. You don't know what these players, you know, the NBA is more of the sports that, you know, a lot of players come out and they're more socially active and more politically active, if you will, within the sport. So I think it's going to have, for them, it's just, I would say, a part of containment, you know, to contain the issue and to understand what the players are feeling. Also, pertaining to these social issues that we are going through right now, especially the outcome of this trial and how it happened and everything. So I think it's in their best interest to do that, and that's what they're thinking about also. That is just in our best interest to understand what the players are going through. We don't want anything to happen as far as I guess I'm looking at it from a point of view that they don't want to, maybe they don't want to see no more kneeling or this and that and players walking off and just people showing up to the games, paying, you know, all this money to see these players and they walking off the court. Now, you know, you got to either give their money back or so it's all that is in a pot right now. And I just think it's a smart move on them to postpone these games depending on the outcome of the trial or just for that day period, whether he's found guilty or innocent.
You know, hey, Spencer, I don't want to usurp your time. However, the NBA is not on trial. America's on trial. And Monday, the jurors will be deliberating, and we'll probably get a verdict by the time we have this show again next week. But America's on trial, gentlemen. America is on trial this week.
All right. Thank you for listening. Once again, this is the Man. We'll be back again next week. I mean, it was a wonderful show today. I want to thank all the panelists. And say have a nice week, guys. Talk to you again next week.
You have a good week, guys. Ron, I'll say a prayer for your friend.
Thank you, Bruce. Have a great week. Thank you, Bruce. Everybody,
okay,
have a great week.
Thank you, gentlemen.